Welcome back to Module 7 of the Jumpstart Windows Azure Pack Infrastructure as a Service. I'm Simon Perryman, and I'm once again joined by Bradley. And we're going to kind of wrap things up today, really focusing on tenant experiences, but also covering a few best practices and answering some other unanswered questions that have come up throughout the event. So first of all, let's do a quick review of where we are today. We've really kind of started yesterday by covering the core infrastructure, putting everything together. Today we talked about automation and then going and extending our solutions with some of our partners. Now, what we're really going to focus on this module is what the experience looks like to the end user. But before I jump ahead, I want Brad to have an opportunity to introduce himself as well.
You bet. I'm Bradley Bartz. I'm the Group Program Manager for the Windows Azure Pack, and I'm actually on the engineering team that builds the technology. So we're in the Azure organization. We actually create the core WAP technologies themselves, the MSIs, the distribution. We ship the product along with System Center into partner data centers to make available for deployment in your environments. Anyway, that's enough about me. Let's talk about WAP.
Okay, well, let's go through the agenda then. What are we going to cover as part of this particular module? I think we're going to start off a little bit with the management portal. Is that right?
That's correct. We'll do an overview of the management portal. We'll talk about some of the tenant services that are available, the websites, infrastructure as a service. We'll talk about some of the messaging capabilities. But this is also a forum to describe a little bit about some of the additional capabilities that you may not have seen so far. Okay, let's get started. As a refresher from yesterday, you'll know that there's the management portal, it sits on top of a REST API, and then there's a set of workloads that run underneath. There's a website PaaS workload, there's a virtual machine workload, there's also this messaging workload, which is Service Bus. Now, typically in an IT environment, you wouldn't think of messaging as a critical workload, but from an application developer, it's how you stitch services together and relay messages between your applications. So it's a service. In Azure, this is one of the Azure services that we have running in the public cloud for allowing application developers to route messages between tiers of their applications. It's also available as part of the WAP distribution into partner data centers for those application developers who are building multi-tier applications that need a reliable messaging service for their applications. So that is another workload. There's obviously the virtual networks and database capabilities for both SQL Server and for MySQL. And again, customers come in and access it both from a UX experience and from a REST API. And again, it is about this consistency with Azure, and I want to emphasize that again. A lot of this has been expressed about the capabilities that you can offer to your customers within your environment, but it's also about that continuity with Microsoft's Azure Public Cloud. And what this really allows your customers to do is to leverage a common skill set that they're using when they target Azure and targeting resources coming from your data center. They don't have to learn two ways of doing things or two different sets of capabilities or make this mental shift and, oh, I'm going to IT, I have to do things completely differently. Oh, I'm going to Azure and it works differently there. It's about creating that one consistent platform that your customers can have of this fluid experience regardless of whether they're using private cloud resources or public cloud resources. So it is about this consistent cloud platform that Windows Azure Pack helps to enable. And that's both for the workload experiences, for dashboards that are running, and these are just examples of the portal running both in the private cloud and in the public cloud, again, as part of a consistent platform. So now I'm going to focus specifically on the website workload that we talked a little bit about yesterday. And this is a PaaS platform. It's scalable, it's flexible, it's open. It supports a variety of different configurations. And it is also a transformation. You know, when you think about a website, you might think, yeah, just spin up a VM, run IIS on a single VM, you're good. You can run your web application that way. Well, one, it doesn't really scale. It's running on a dedicated server, sitting there by itself. It's not going to meet HA compliance. It's running, what, maybe one, two workloads. You start to put a lot of workloads. They start competing for resources on that single box. It's really not part of a cloud solution. So this website runtime has transitioned from a server model for delivering web applications into a cloud, used to be called web farms, but this is a more elaborate version of that, an evolution of web farm technology into a web server cloud, a cloud technology for applications to be deployed on that cloud to allow this fluid movement of that application in that cloud environment, and allow it to have failover capabilities and running in there. So it's the evolution of traditional single server web hosting into a web application running on a PaaS runtime.
Now, since you're actually talking about this different type of cloud architecture, we've had a question come up a couple times about kind of comparing Windows Azure Pack with the core Azure Data Center architecture. Can you talk a little bit about how the architecture in Windows Azure is actually designed and how it's different?
Yeah, you bet. I'd be happy to. Let's go back. I'm going to go back a slide or two here. So let me just go back a little bit on that one. So, yeah, we can use this one. So if you look at this diagram, you see we have a management portal, we have REST APIs, we have workloads that are running underneath that REST API. This framework is nearly identical to what's running in Azure today. So the management portal, WAAP actually is the same code base that we ship and operate in Azure. So it is the same code base, we're packaging and shipping it for our partner data centers and their environment. It's customized for the private data center, so it does have some unique capabilities that aren't in the public cloud, but it really is the same code base, the same capabilities. The REST API is really about the same model. In Azure, they call it RDFE, or the REST API, of which Azure services are then offered to tenants. So when they come into the Azure API to manage their services, they're going through this common service management REST API that the portal actually talks to that REST API for consuming those services. Then these workloads plug into that REST API in Azure just as they do in premise. So it really is the same architecture. Now, where things get a little bit different is the substrate or the fabric that those services are running on. For example, in Azure, we have a fabric designed for hyperscale that can scale across the globe, across the Azure data centers. That fabric is different. Now, in WAAP, our fabric on-premise is provided by Windows Server and System Center. They provide the fabric for WAAP's services that are running. So that is a difference between Azure and on-premise, is that the fabric is coming from Windows Server and System Center, but the workloads, once they plug in on top of that, would be identical. So for example, the website's runtime that I just showed here in the diagram, that runtime is the same code base. That, if you look at that vertical slice here, plugging in, that runtime, the logic, the code there, I would say, I don't have an exact number, but maybe on the order of 90%, similar to what you'll find in Azure Public Cloud. So that it is the same runtime with some differentiation in how it's materialized in Azure and on-premise, but it's by and large the same runtime. This is also true of the service bus, our messaging tier. It's the same service bus technology that runs in Azure is made available in the private data center. Where things are a little bit different, again, is going to be on the fabric. So the IaaS experience is going to be a little bit different on how that is realized on-premise and in Azure. So hopefully that addresses that question.
That was great. Thanks.
All right. So if we go back to this web cloud, this is part capabilities of this PaaS platform. Now, this is not something that, as an IT operator, if you look at this list, it's got ASP.NET, it's got Python, it's got classic ASP, Node.js, PHP, SQL, MySQL, you're going, oh, do I have to do this, and how do I maintain? Do I have to put that version of this framework on each of these machines? How do I manage and configure this? You don't have to worry about it. That PaaS platform already as part of deploying that website's runtime, deploys and make these technologies available. And what's a little bit different, and this is worth noting, in Azure, these capabilities are there by default, and they are when you deploy on-premise, but what's a little bit different for our partner data centers, and we do have some partners doing this, because you own the fabric and the deployment of the fabric and the deployment of this PaaS service, you have opportunities to customize and tailor that environment uniquely to your customers. So for example, we have some partners who have taken this list of capabilities where I've got ASP.NET, Python, classic ASP, Node.js, and PHP, and they've actually added other frameworks, some specific to their organization or some that hosting providers want to offer that are unique, a differentiated framework that they make available as part of their PaaS platform. You can actually do that. There is a way to inject, if you will, additional frameworks that need to be deployed as part of that web runtime as it's provisioning new capacity for those web applications. So that's a customization, a layer of customization that is available. And that's one of the fun things about deploying and building your own private cloud, is those abilities to tweak the workloads unique to your environment. And again, customizable, self-service gallery, popular web applications, database integration. And again, CodePlex, Visual Studio, Gitbucket, Dropbox, all these capabilities are enabled as part of that web platform. Let me switch for just a moment into a demo environment. And I want to show a couple of things here. In this environment, I'm going to show kind of that web app gallery. When I go and go deploy a new website, and you saw me do it yesterday where I created a custom web application. In this case, I'm going to look at creating a web application from a gallery. And a gallery is a curated list of web applications. You should be seeing those on the screen right now, and it's a long list. And you might ask, well, where does this list of applications come from? And can I customize it? Can I tailor this list of applications I want to provide to my customers? So by default, the list of applications you're seeing is actually coming from a feed hosted in Windows Azure and made available, and it's automatically there when you deploy. However, you don't have to consume the feed that way. You can actually create your own offline version of this feed. Let's say you're doing a completely isolated private cloud with no connectivity to the internet. You can do that. There is a way to offline the feed so you can self-host it within your data center to provide this gallery experience to your customers for web applications. Now notice, this is a different gallery than the virtual machine gallery. And here we have gallery specific to each workload. This is a web app gallery for deployment on that web PaaS. Another thing you can do when you offline your own feed and host your own feed for your application, you can modify the feed. So you can add your own custom applications that you want to be deployed, your web applications. Let's say you have your own version of Joomla Drupal applications that you want to make broadly available within your organization. You could do that as part of this gallery as well. So that's an example of offlining and customizing a web app gallery for deployment. And again, this isn't deploying machines. That gallery is deploying an application, not a virtual machine, onto a PaaS service. A slight difference from what happens when you go through the VM gallery.
Now, we had a question that came up here. So it looks like, you know, you're doing this initial configuration, you do it through test. Once you get to actual post-deployment, do you actually need to go and reconfigure anything, either portals or APIs?
So that's going to be depending on the requirements of your application. The application, for example, this is a web application, and in the dashboard, you can actually go in and configure it here. So part of this application, you can pick which version of the framework, which PHP version. These are application-specific settings. The version that you're using are which versions are supported by the PaaS platform. Those frameworks are already available. I am simply toggling which version the application is going to use. It's not actually targeting causing a new deployment of technology. It's a capability built into the platform, and I'm just toggling which are being made available to the application. And so there's a number of application settings that are here. And so in this case, it's a web application. All the settings are in the dashboard for that application. So that it's managed through the dashboard of WAP along with the telemetry of it. All right, let's go back. So that's a little bit about website. And I'm going to move kind of quickly here because we want to show a number of different capabilities. So I'm going to switch back to the demo and to the slide deck, and we'll keep going. Infrastructure as a service you've seen a lot of. And again, the virtual machines and the virtual networking, the provider of those capabilities for the Windows Azure Pack is the Windows Server System Center. They are the virtualized provider for the fabric enabling IaaS, which includes virtual machines and networking. And it provides self-service IaaS. You know, the difference between just VMs and IaaS is this idea of self-service. It's infrastructure as a service to consumers, so they can on-demand provision VM capacity.
Now, is there a maximum number of VM resources that are available with each subscription, such as virtual machines or virtual networks?
Great question. And this comes up quite often about, you know, I'm a little nervous. I don't want to do this whole IaaS WAP thing and have some customer come in and all of a sudden consume all the capacity running in my data center for, I don't know, a game they're running. You know, how do I control the consumption of resources from my data center? And this is where it's a little bit different than in Azure. In Azure, it's an all-you-can-eat model. Just come in and we'll gladly provide you as much capacity as you want. You'll just get a bill at the end of the month for as much as you use. But in a private data center, you want to have a little bit more control, because when your capacity is exceeded, it doesn't come automatically in your environment. You have a whole backlog to go get new equipment deployed in your environment. So how do you put and regulate some of that capabilities? When you offer a service and you're going to make a service available to the tenant portal, you're able to define quotas and constraints. And some of this was covered yesterday when they were going through the plan orchestration model. When you define an offer, you're building a plan for each resource type that you plug in, IaaS, for virtual machines is one of those resource types. When you plug in websites, each resource type offers a set of constraints that you can set on the consumption of that resource type. So when I go in and define and make IaaS available to my customers, I have the ability. I can say, hey, this any subscription to this plan is only good for one VM. That's it. If you try to provision another VM, it's going to fail. You will not get another VM. I can say it's good for up to five VMs. You can create what's called a plan add-on for an additional five PMs, which has to have another workflow to get approved and then added to your subscription. So you have the idea to bucketize, define a limit to how much capacity you can freely provision and deprovision. And then the customer has to live within that quota until they get a quota bump, or subscribe to a new plan that you're making available to them. So that's where it's different than Azure, is that you can define that. As a matter of fact, while we're on this topic, I'm gonna show something else because it is really relevant to this conversation. So I'm gonna switch back to my demo environment.
And while you're doing that, we did wanna let people know that our final technical poll of the day is posted. If you could please answer that. We're asking which type of as a services are you most interested in as well? You know, are you continually interested in this database as a service, platform as a service? Which of these are you most likely to deploy? So if you could please let us know, give us feedback, that will help guide us somewhat in what we're going to deliver and what our engineering team's going to be investing in as well.
Okay. So now if we go back to the demo machine, here you'll see I have basically, I'm logged in with an account, and I actually have a couple of subscriptions, and a lot of these are here. But if I were to select just one subscription, I'm gonna see only a set of capabilities that are available on that subscription. So for example, on this subscription, I'm only seeing websites and SQL databases. I'm not even seeing VMs. They don't show up because I don't have permissions to do any IaaS on this subscription. I can do websites and MySQL databases, and that's it. I have another subscription that does give me those capabilities. It's my VM plan. When I add that subscription to my view, I'm gonna have additional capabilities light up. This is what we mean by an adaptive UI. It's showing you the set of resources or services that are available to you on the subscriptions that are you subscribed to, and then that subscription is defining how much of that resource you can even consume. Now I'm gonna switch to a different portal. I want you to just note, before I make the switch though, what you're seeing here on the left is websites, virtual machines, network, MySQL, and that's it. I have four service types. Now I'm gonna switch to another WAP deployment. And in this WAP deployment, I'm logged in, I have websites. Now this one actually has the GridPro integration, so I'm getting requests and ticketing integrated. I do have IaaS, I've got virtual machines, I've got networkings. Hey, there's this service bus thing, another service is lighting up. Oh, I don't just have MySQL, I have SQL Server, I can provision databases. Now, this isn't about spinning up a VM that I have SQL Server running on. This is about an IT maintained SQL cluster that I have the permissions to provision databases on. And this is a key difference because now as an IT organization, as an operator, I can have my own deployment of a SQL cluster with my backup policy, my integrity, all my organizational governance policy that I need to do to maintain the integrity of that corporate data. And then I can offer databases as a service against that cluster. And so now, I can have a plan defined that says, hey, I'm gonna allow you to provision one database, two databases, five databases, whatever. You can define how many databases you're gonna allow a tenant to provision against your cluster. You can have multiple clusters. I might have one that's just for skunkwork projects running on commodity hardware. I'm gonna allow them create, you know, maybe more databases and I don't care. They'll create them, delete them. I don't have a lot of corporate governance on it. It's really for development projects to allow them to get quick databases on demand. I may have another deployment of a SQL cluster on Big Iron with a bunch of governance and policy applied, and I'm gonna have a much more constrained policy for how databases are provisioned against that. But the customer experience will be the same. I'll see that database tab show up, I can get information, I can create new databases, resize databases if they're allowed. And I wanna make a quick note here too. On the SQL database service, when you enable SQL database as a resource provider, for doing database as a service. It even supports always-on availability groups in that cluster. And this is key, because when you start to provide database as a service, you want to offer a little bit more of high availability. You want to offer that reliable service to that database. And this is different than just deploying SQL on a VM. If that VM goes down, your database is gone all of a sudden. Here, SQL Server and SQL Server clusters allows you to have availability groups and do failover and have that database always on. And if a database goes down, it'll automatically, the same connection string will route to the next server in that availability group. And so if you've configured your SQL cluster with availability groups and you offer that as part of a plan, you can enable always on support. So when databases are provisioned by WAP against that SQL cluster, they will have always on capability for doing database as a service. And this is, again, something that's unique on premise for working with SQL Server and SQL Server clusters. But the key point here that I was getting at earlier, the set of services that your tenant is going to see is completely defined by you, the operator, based on the set of services you've deployed and the set of services that you've made available on an individual plan, and then the subscription that that customer has against that plan. That'll control what they see.
Now, are you doing this at the per user level, or is it possible to do this at the per user group level?
So, great question. The constraints, you think of a user group as the subscribers to a plan. The plan is that aggregation of capability. That's where you define which services and what quotas. And you can have as many plans as appropriate for your business. And then a user can be subscribed to one or more plans. So that can, and I can have any number of users subscribed to any number of plans. It really is a many-to-many relationship. So what you're going to see is all users subscribed to Plan A will get only the set of capabilities in Plan A, and they each have to live within the quotas defined in Plan A. But a user subscribed to Plan A, if you allow it, could also have a subscription to Plan B, which would give them a different set of capabilities that may even be running in a different part of your organization, in a different deployment of cloud infrastructure. So you can do that mapping and set of constraints. So that's how you do the aggregation of user groups, is through plans. Okay. So I'm going to keep going here. And again, virtual networking, there's a complete virtual networking, and what this is allowing is allowing your customers to define their networks. This is in many ways targeting DevOps scenarios for these teams that are building applications, they're deploying a couple of virtual machines, they want to start creating a network to manage those virtual machines while they're building applications or doing test deployments. They can do this all through the WAP portal, manage that virtual network, define the network constraints. And if you're working with a hosting partner or are a hoster yourselves, one of the capabilities, or maybe you're an enterprise and you want to have remote offices that are actually logging in to your corporate network through a publicly exposed WAP portal that you're making available. Azure has a capability called Azure Connect. And what Azure Connect allows the customers who come to public cloud to do is to establish effectively a site-to-site network between the public cloud and their environment in the private cloud. I can establish basically that bridge, that connectivity between the public cloud, the VMs that are provisioned in the public cloud, and VMs that I might have operating in the private cloud. Well, as part of WAP, in our integration with Windows Server and System Center, we actually do expose, and you can conditionally offer it, site-to-site networking, which would allow your tenants to even establish their own on-demand site-to-site network bridging capabilities. So if you wanted to expose these capabilities and allow that, this is really appealing to hosters that want to offer site-to-site networking to their enterprise customers. They can do that with WAP and Windows Server System Center. For enterprises, it's very useful for remote office locations, maybe where they have a smaller private cloud or remote office. They're getting corporate services from a broader data center inside, and they want to establish a site-to-site network between their two environments. They can do that through the WAP dashboard. So you have those site-to-site capabilities.
Now, we had a couple questions come in around kind of these hybrid management capabilities. First one came around the actual connection to the virtual machine. If you're doing a remote connection to the virtual machine over the public internet, is that secure?
So
So
through the VM Connect console.
There's a lot of questions there, and matter of fact, the question came up about remote connections to machines. So let's switch to another demo right now. We'll go ahead and do this. This is fun. And I want to answer the question, but I want to actually show it with real product and make this real.
Great.
So here I have an environment. I do have some virtual machines deployed. Okay. Here I have some virtual machines that define. Now, what defines the security and is it secure is going to be whether or not you're making that machine publicly available. Have I put a public network on that machine so that I can access it? How do I do it? Today, when you're accessing a remote machine in another cloud, typically what you do is you enable remote desktop, you make sure that it has a network that you have access to, either through a VPN, or maybe it's on the public network, and I do a remote console connection to the remote machine. And in the public cloud, that is typically done by having a machine with a public address, a public IP address. Now, one of the unique capabilities of Windows Azure Pack in conjunction with work that went into Windows Server and into System Center and into Hyper-V is a capability called Console Connect. And Console Connect is a very powerful capability. Think of it as connectivity. It's almost like remote desk. How do I say this right? It's RDP as a service kind of connectivity to my VM. So here I have a VM. And I can connect to it. I can see instances running. This happens to be running in a VM role. I'm looking at instances. There is a connect tab down here. Now, this matter of fact, let me see. Maybe I have a Windows instance. Let me go to a Windows instance first here. Okay. So here, now that you're seeing I'm logged in, I'm managing a Windows desktop, a Windows app VM, from the WAP dashboard. Notice when I go to the Connect tab or the Connect button on the bottom, when I click Connect, I have two options. I have Desktop and Console. Here's the fundamental difference. When I click Connect, that means that I must have my local network that I'm connecting to, must have access to the network that that machine is running in. Either I've done a site-to-site network and I've got a virtual connection, then it's as secure as the site-to-site network is that you've established, or I'm going over a public network to get access to the remote desktop service running on that VM, in which case it's protected by whatever firewalls you're running on that VM, but it is an IP that is publicly accessible. But notice now if we go back to the demo that there's another option in that list called Console Connect. Console Connect is not connecting directly to the machine. It is connecting through a secure protocol to the virtualization plane to get access to that machine. So this would allow me to connect to the VM running. So if I were to do a console connect to that actual VM that's running, and I go ahead and open it, it's doing a console connect to that Windows image that is running. And in this case, I'm logged in, but I did not go through the public RDP session. This is a console connect as opposed to remote desktop, and it has some unique capabilities. For example, the VM doesn't even have to be running. The VM might be in a boot problem. It's not booting correctly. I can actually get access to the console image, the console screen for that image running in a remote cloud through Console Connect. Console Connect is an optional service that you can offer to your customers. Now, just to make a point of that, and that it's different than remote desktop. Remote desktop is going to a service running in guest. Console Connect is not. The best thing I can do to illustrate that, let me do this real quickly. I'm going to close this one here. Okay, close that Console Connect. I'm going to switch back to this Linux instance. Now, in this case, I'm looking at a Linux machine. Now, Linux, I can't do a remote desktop session to because we don't have a remote desktop guest running in that Linux box for me to connect to. So here, when I go to connect, notice I don't have a desktop connection, but I still have a console connection. So I'm going to connect to a Linux machine using the RDP protocol. So here I'm going to hit console connect. I'm going to go ahead and it says connect to console. Same prompts I got before. Look, it's looking like I'm just connecting to a Windows desktop. It's actually launching the remote desktop connection. Yeah, it's doing a remote desktop connection. I'm now doing a console connect just like I would going to a Windows box. But when this comes up, notice what just happened. I'm now remoted into a Linux machine using RDP protocol. That's the power of Console Connect. And that is a service, that is a secure endpoint that you as the operator can host and provide access to. Whether that machine even has a public network or not, it doesn't matter. Whether that machine has any networks on it, it doesn't matter. You're going through the hypervised plane to get access to that. And there's some great sessions and other information that is available if you want to learn more about Console Connect. But is it giving you that console access to the virtualized workloads running in your data center?
That was a great answer and example. That's kind of triggered just one more networking related question. And that's basically, can I use IPv4 or IPv6? Do we care?
Yes. Both are supported. You can use both IPv4 and IPv6.
Great.
So you're good to go there. So I'm going to keep going here. All right. Service bus is an additional workload that can be plugged into your environment. That workload would be for messaging. Not really a lot to show here, but I will just so that you see that it's there. Now, in this case, remember, in this environment, my operator and my subscriptions don't give me access to service bus. But in this other environment that I have, I do. There is service bus. And service bus has a model. This is very similar to Azure. If you're an application developer and you've defined a message queue for routing applications between messages, and I were to go to Azure and look at managing service bus, it's going to look very similar as the experience we're showing here. In this case, we have a service bus deployment. I can manage my topics and queues, and I can see the activity that's going on. In this case, I don't really have anything configured and using it. So there's not a whole lot to show, but it is a net new experience that is plugged in. It's analogous to what they would get in Azure. And as an application developer, I would do the same experience for managing the topics and messages that are flowing between tiers of my application in your data center, if that is exposed.
Now, this actually, as you start to talk about tiers, brings up another question we got asked. Is there any way to automatically deploy a multi-tier application? And they're kind of comparing that to virtual machine manager's service template designer, where you kind of have those multiple tiers. Do we support that, or is there a way that you could implement that?
Yeah, let me talk to that point real briefly. And it really is about deploying multi-tier applications. And I think generally when I hear that question, it's about deploying multi-tier virtualized applications, or VMs, multi-tier applications that are inside a virtual machine container, as to a multiple PaaS service application. Because you could have an application that's using website runtime as a service and using database as a service, in which case there are no VMs. A matter of fact, when I deploy an application from the web app gallery, it's actually deploying an application onto a web PaaS and provisioning a database against a database PaaS service, a database as a service, and deploying that as a single application. So that level is supported between those two, web as a service and database as a service. But I want to bring us back to the service template model, because in the System Center world, that is the way of distributing a multi-machine a multi-tier application. WAP, and remember that CloudOS journey that I mentioned we were on very earlier, it's about this unification of building those applications for the cloud and that consistency. And we looked at WAP and building those multi-tier applications. What we were very concerned is, how do I build multi-tier applications that I can easily deploy in both Azure and into the private cloud? And we really didn't have a rational model that worked in both environments today. So WAP natively, as it sits today, supports VMroll, which is one tier that can scale. You can build a multi-tier application by deploying two VMrolls, and then you can link them together through a virtual network. But if you actually want to use a service template to deploy a multi-tier application out of the box, you'd have to use something like the integration with Service Manager that GridPro did and the automation tools. You can do it, but it's more work on your part to create the runbooks, to define the service templates, to have that model for deploying applications. But that is a service, a system center model for building multi-tier applications and deploying those. One of the things we're looking at as we evolve multi-tier applications in Azure and evolving the multi-tier applications is working on having a consistent model that'll allow you to deploy multi-tier applications consistently in Azure and on-premise. That That consistent model doesn't exist in WAP today or in Azure today, as a matter of fact. But that's the kind of thinking we're doing now, is how do we provide a consistent multi-tier packaging model for Azure and on-premise moving forward? So today, you kind of have to piece it together either through VM roles or do it through some custom automation that you're doing through service templates and the SMA runbooks and integration with a service manager and a Grid Pro style solution. So, long-winded answer for that. Okay. We'll keep going here. Message queues, not really a lot to say here, except that it really is that kind of messaging layer. It is reliable messaging for a variety of applications and business logic. You saw that. We did databases. We're doing these a little bit out of order, which is okay. I think I've covered most of the information on databases. By the way, I'll switch back here to the demo again real quickly. I want you to notice when we go back here, and really, I can't emphasize this a point, the capabilities and services I'm seeing are unique. Here you'll see I get SQL Server and the set of capabilities, but if I go back to my other subscription, my other account, I don't. I have only the MySQL. Again, the databases of service you're providing is unique to your organization. You can also provide provisioning databases as part of a VM. If you want dedicated database servers on VMs, it could be bundled in that way as part of your VM provisioning.
Now, with MySQL, does that come in box, or is that an add-on that you would need to go and separately install?
Right. So when you deploy Windows Azure Pack today, there's a number of services that are part of the distribution for Windows Azure Pack. And one of those is actually the MySQL resource provider. Think of a resource provider is basically the REST contract for how to interact with that service. WAP doesn't distribute or install MySQL. Okay? But WAP does provide the resource provider that can talk to a MySQL deployment. So you have to actually do the MySQL deployment, set it up however you want to set up MySQL, using the MySQL guidance to set it up and get the MySQL distribution and build out the MySQL deployment. Once you have it there, as part of WAP, you can deploy the MySQL resource provider that will then interact with that MySQL deployment that you have going there. So it doesn't necessarily deploy MySQL for you, although a WAP is actually distributed through something called the Web Platform Installer. The Web Platform Installer is an aggregated installer that chains together a bunch of other installers. So it does actually include a reference to the MySQL installer. Then you can run that installer, but you don't have to. You can actually go have a more robust MySQL deployment as well. So those capabilities are there. By the way, on that note, so when we talk about partners like that we just saw in the previous session for Cloud Cruiser and Grid Pro, because the WAP distribution is part of the Web Platform Installer and it is this chained installation experience, it actually allows our partners to plug in and be part of the WAP family as part of that distribution. So when you go and you get WAP today, you'll actually get the latest and greatest of Cloud Cruiser being made available to you as part of that WAP distribution. And the same for Grid Pro and these other capabilities. And as new providers come in, they're plugging in to this distribution mechanism that we have for WAP.
So another question came in. Is WAP open source?
WAP is not open source, but WAP is free. So you can get WAP through the Web Platform Installer. The Web Platform Installer does include other open source technologies. And actually, WAP does use some open source technologies, but the WAP code base itself is not open source. And now I want to talk a little bit about some extensibility. Now, not everyone in the audience may be interested in this aspect of extensibility, but it's worth touching on. This is mostly applicable to hosting service providers. As a matter of fact, what I'm going to outline now, and most people may or may not be aware, that Windows Azure Pack integrates with Parallels for our hosting provider community. And you might think, wait a minute, Parallels. Parallels is a management panel.
Mm-hmm.
WAP's a management, we call it a management dashboard, management portal panel. Well, do I use one or the other or the both? Or what's the difference?
We actually integrate with Parallels. We're not an alternative to Parallels for hosting providers. We can integrate with Parallels very seamlessly for a fluid experience. Let me give you an example. Parallels provides a great experience for hosters and resellers to provide services coming from their data center. And it's really focused on provisioning those workloads, traditional workloads in those data centers and capabilities. And what WAAP brings to it is kind of that Azure experience and these new PaaS-oriented services that you might also be offered for those customers that want to have that consistent experience with what they're also getting in Azure. So Parallels has created an APS package that integrates with WAAP so that a hosting provider with Parallels can offer WAAP subscriptions against the private cloud or hosted cloud environment to allow the customers to get both services that they've already been getting from Parallels, but also additional capabilities that they'd be getting from WAAP. So I'm going to describe a little bit about what that interaction looks like. So, the way this works, an IT administrator basically defines these resource clouds and creates these clouds. They then go and they define plans, define the quotas and constraints of how to consume those plans. Tenants subscribe to a plan. That plan then provides whatever resources the admin has provided with the quotas and constraints. Ultimately, that's where they get the services that they're deploying against those resources, restricted by the quotas, plans allocated from the cloud. So that's the diagram here. You've seen some of this. It's another visualization. Now, let me go back for just a second here. Go back. I moved a little too quickly. Page up. Okay. Many hosting service providers already have a storefront, already have a panel. Think Parallels in this case. They already have customer-ready services that they might be doing for email, desktop, web, collaboration, and conferencing. They already have a catalog of services and offers that they're doing, but they're hearing requests from their customers, and they are, to use Windows or get access to Windows Azure Pack for some Azure consistent services. They have applications designed that use Service Bus and other capabilities. They'd like to be able to deploy those. How can they do that from hosting these hosting service providers? Or they want to use the new website runtime that they'd find in Azure. They want to get that service from a hosting service provider. How is a service provider going to do that? Do they require the hosting service provider to actually get a new Parallels upgrade and a new Parallels feature? Does Parallels have to build support for all these new Azure capabilities that are being deployed? No. What happens is Parallels, in this case, would integrate with WAAP, or so could other panels, and other panel providers are doing this as well. They're following the model here, where they integrate. So in this model, what happens is the customer storefront for both in-house and third-party applications is still managed by the hosting service provider through theirs, but the tenant portal for managing and consuming the Azure-compatible resources is provided by the WAAP integration for those Azure services. So think of it as a companion portal for the management dashboard running from that hosting service provider.
Is it possible to customize the look of that portal?
Yes, as a matter of fact, it is. If I'm going to go back again. So this tenant experience is a white label solution, so it can be branded. It can be branded with the theme, the colors, and the logo of the parent organization so that when they're working within the WAAP experience from the hoster, that WAAP experience can carry the hoster brand and identity in the WAAP experience. And it goes beyond that. For example, we even allow this idea of having a reseller branding so that in a reseller model, that branding can follow through in the WAAP portal. And that came in one of the recent updates to WAAP. So yes, it is absolutely a white label solution. So let's talk about how we integrate with these third-party or custom in-house portal solutions. In this case, for a typical service provider flow, the admin, this is the service provider, would go into WAAP and they would define sets of plans in WAAP that they want to actually then offer through their catalog. But they need to create the base plans in WAAP. So the quotas are defined in WAAP. WAAP will honor and define those quotas. So here they're going to WAAP, the WAAP admin plane, they define the set of plans that they're going to curate in their catalog. So they go ahead and define those plans. Next, there's a process of curation where they basically take the plans as defined in WAAP
and make those offers in their catalog. And this is what the APS package in Parallels does. And I'm not promoting Parallels here. It is an example of how a solution for hosting service providers went through this process. And our other panel providers are doing a similar model. So one, their offer management system will look at the plans defined in WAP. They'll say, hey, which of these plans do you want to make available to your customers? They'll look at that list. They'll then add those plans through a curation process to a catalog and a storefront and assign pricing and value propers. Well, they'll say, hey, I want to charge this much for these services and plans. That whole curation, pricing and billing model is established by the panel. For the enterprise, Cloud Cruisers filling that role in many respects. For a hosting service provider, it might be a custom billing solution or a Parallels billing solution. And this is how that would work. That end of it is handled by that part of the system. Then they can, the user catalog or the user identity store is also part of that existing infra, if you will. They have an identity provider for customers coming to their storefront. They're doing billings against those identity, and those users are stored there. When a user comes in then and acquires an offer through their storefront, what happens is, in this case, this is where the Parallels APS package comes in, or any custom panel that integrates WAP could do this. This is all done programmatically. Their system can then say, hey, I've got a new user. They're going to subscribe to this plan. Create a subscription for this identity against this plan. There's APIs in WAP to do that. That'll go ahead and provision a subscription for that user against that plan, giving them access to those set of services. Once that provisioning process is done, what's really happening here is you're not necessarily provisioning the resources yet, you're provisioning the subscription against the plan, which is now going to give the user a self-service experience to use that subscription. But the provisioning of that was done by the provider's infrastructure by going against the WAP APIs. So here, they've called the APIs, they provisioned a subscription for that user against that plan. Now, the user can then be transitioned from the, in this case, the Parallels portal or the provider-specific portal. The user can be transitioned to the WAP portal. Because WAP can be deployed to use custom STS providers, they can be authenticated against the same STS identity that was used to authenticate that user in the operator, in the service provider's environment. So in this case, the user would be authenticated against the same STS provider. They would now be logged into the WAP portal. When they're logged into the WAP portal, they're going to see the subscription that they just bought through the provider storefront. So imagine this. I went into the Parallels storefront. I bought the website capabilities with all this great capability. I buy it. I see, oh, I've got a plan. This is how much it cost me. I'm seeing that all the Parallels environment. I say, I want to use that subscription. Boom, I'm logged right in. I'm sitting there in the WAP dashboard with the websites, with that subscription, with those resources on that subscription immediately available. That's how that flow would work. The tenant is now logged in. They see those subscriptions. They're able to start using those services. Now, the provider infrastructure then is able to tap into our usage pipeline. This is some of the presentations you saw yesterday around billing and utilization. We provide that aggregated endpoint that shows all the usage data on a per subscription basis. In this case, that billing solution, Parallels again, another example, as well as other hosting service providers, are consuming that usage data to create billing records on that subscription that they can go and then charge that user for, and ultimately go ahead and then show up in the customer's billing panel that they provide what their usage is in WAP along with other usage that they might be getting from the data center. So really, WAP is a companion experience that can be integrated with experiences that an operator might already have in their environment. And this is an example of that flow. So basically, there's an interaction. Everything that you see us doing in the admin panel or the tenant portal can be programmatically done through PowerShell and REST APIs. Okay. And then last but not least, And this was just mentioned and showed examples in the previous session of the integration of both GridPro and Cloud Cruiser. We do allow custom resource providers to be built and plugged into the Windows Azure Pack. And if we look at this diagram, and you've seen multiple views of this architecture, you know, we saw websites, virtual machines, service bus, networking, and database. Additional services can be plugged in. And this is what Cloud Cruiser has done. They've plugged in an additional custom resource provider that does billing. GridPro has created one that plugs in and talks to service manager. We have other solutions. For example, Apprenda is creating a custom, or has created, and it is available today. You can get it for and they've created a PaaS, a service for .NET applications. They've created this custom resource provider that can plug in. It provides an a UX experience. So for managing that PaaS resource, similar to websites, but for managing this PaaS resource that's running in your data center, this is a dynamic system. When you plug in one of these resources, they can plug into that REST API. When they plug in, they also provide the usage and billing data so that they can be monetized. They're plugging in a user experience. These services can be added. And an organization can also create custom resources for other capabilities that you might be building that are unique to your organization. So you can build these custom resource types, these custom services, and add them to your environment.
All right. Well, we actually have some more questions.
Yeah, fire away.
We've got about 10 minutes left or so in the session. So the first to look at other possible future capabilities or whether we could integrate them. So first question is it possible to offer DR as a service through Windows Azure Pack? So for example, I'm a user, I want to ensure that my virtual machines get sent to a secondary site or maybe up to Azure using site recovery. Is that something that we could build or integrate?
So right now those DR scenarios are actually provided through the System Center virtualization. There is DR recovery, there's an integration with Virtual Machine Manager and Hyper-V for doing disaster recovery. That's the level of integration at the backend fabric, so you could absolutely do that. What we don't have yet today is the bleed through into the WAP experience for how a tenant can self-service manage that. But that doesn't mean you as an operator can't configure your fabric to do that on behalf for the tenant. So yes, as part of the fabric admin, you can absolutely do that. We don't yet have it plumbed all the way through the stack for a tenant to do that on a self-service basis.
Okay, the next one would be, can you offer backup as a service? So I'm a tenant, I've deployed my virtual machine, I want to make sure it gets backed up once a day.
So again, WAP today doesn't have that as a first-class experience exposed. So one, it could be exposed just to something that you're doing on the back end. Maybe you do it through the ticketing integration with GridPro, where you have a service request to do backup and an automation process through a runbook that would do the backup on the tenant's behalf and do it through that way. So there are multiple angles to how you do it to provide it. But WAP as you get it, the vanilla WAP, if you will, doesn't offer it, but there are multiple ways that you could extend or customize and tailor that to provide those capabilities to your customers.
All right, so we have a best practice question. If you're a customer and you're deploying a brand new self-service portal today, should you use WAP, the SCSM, the Service Manager Self-Service Portal, or App Controller?
Yeah, great question, because there's a number of different options you have available. So the question is, which do I use? Well, it depends on your audience, your need, and what the requirements are. And they're going to vary in your organization. Matter of fact, they're not mutually exclusive. You can actually deploy multiple of these for different audiences talking to the same fabric on the back end. WAP is really focused for that agile kind of DevOps. I want to provision and deprovision on demand of capacity. It's really focused for those agile teams. Matter of fact, WAP is really helping address that problem of rogue IT, where you have these teams within your organization that are bypassing the IT team right now and going out to AWS or to other hosters to get capacity and are outside of governance. Because there's too many processes in the way to get capacity. WAP can be deployed to address that problem in your organization if you have that problem, where you can say, hey, look, I want to offer an alternative to those customers in my organization so they don't have to go to AWS. They don't have to go to these other hosters. They can come to me. I'll provide the appropriate governance for these temporary workloads, but they can still get that on-demand, that kind of agile capacity. But I still might deploy the service manager
App
controller experience for a different audience in my organization. You could still do that. So these aren't mutually exclusive. It's very much going to depend on the needs of your customers.
Okay, well, the next one we have is for our international audience. Is there localization of WAP available? Meaning, can I have the different dashboards and views in different languages?
Absolutely. WAP is localized in, I think it's 9 different languages now. It supports the 9 different languages. I don't have the exact list with me, but it is available online. But yes, it is localized in the different regions.
Great. Before the next question, I do want to encourage our audience to answer the final poll of the day, which is the NSAT poll. How satisfied are you with the event? And please give us good a thumbs up on this. Now back to the questions that we have from the audience here. How do you actually license the Windows Azure Pack?
Great. So Windows Azure Pack is free. And that's the nice thing about Windows Azure Pack. It's a free product. It comes down. And it is licensed simply by accepting the EULA when you deploy it and run it. So there's no additional licensing. You don't have to buy anything. You don't have to make any kind of commitments to deploy it. So it is a free technology that you can freely deploy throughout your organization.
Now, is WAP officially supported by Microsoft?
Absolutely. Matter of fact, let's cut to my screen right now. I have on the dashboard on my presentation, I have a set of resources and links in the deck that went around. And WAP is a fully supported product. Matter of fact, if you go down here, and one of the links I provided was the WAP product support lifecycle. And if I were to click that link, you'll actually go and you'll see this is on Microsoft. This is a published a link for support.microsoft.com, and if you look up Windows Azure Pack, here is the product lifecycle, the supported lifecycle for WAP, its release date, and its lifecycle up to 2017, and you can actually buy extended support out through 2022. So it is a supported product. You can get support from Microsoft Support. So yes, it is a supported product.
Now, what is the update cadence for it? You know, how frequently are you making changes, enhancements, things like that?
You bet. Believe it or not, we actually update WAP quarterly. We've already had 2 updates go out right now. And this is where WAP's a little bit different. WAP's is kind of this blend between traditional server distributions and cloud agile models. We have this concept of a rolling update, update roll-up. And we actually picked up on that model from System Center as well for the update roll-up. And so we ship on the System Center cadence these update roll-ups. So update roll-up 1 has already gone out. Update roll-up 2 has already gone up. And these update roll-ups aren't just bug fixes. They actually include new features enhancements. We've had 2 that have already gone out. A 3rd is going to come out here very shortly. And also, these update roll-ups are actually slipstreamed into the web platform installer. So when you install WAP for the first time, if you were to go out and install it today, you actually get the latest update. You don't have to then go get each rolling update. You're current if you install now, and you then get an update every quarter for WAP.
So the next question I'm actually going to take, and that is whether the Windows Azure Pack can be installed through the PowerShell Deployment Toolkit, or PDT. And just for some context, the PowerShell Deployment Toolkit is a set of scripts that essentially downloads all of the bits from the evaluation center, creates some VMs, injects the operating system in the VM, and then has something like 30,000 lines of custom PowerShell scripting to actually install every System Center component and role. Now, the answer to whether WAP can be installed is yes. It's actually been made available by the community on systemcenteruniverse.com. We'll post the link shortly. So essentially, using these additional scripts provided by the community, you can actually do an end-to-end WAP installation as well. Now, our final question we're going to have of the day here, hopefully a fun one. What is the coolest real-world customer scenario you've seen with WAP?
Oh, I don't know about coolest.
Okay, maybe not coolest, but most interesting or most complex.
What we find are a lot of customers doing very different things, and it really is to meet the needs of their business, whether they're creating totally private clouds. For example, we have customers that are doing truly dedicated, isolated clouds. We have customers actually doing multi-data center deployments, where they're using WAP as a management dashboard across different data centers, where they have situations like that. We have customers that are doing customized feeds, like I mentioned, for the web runtime, where they've created their own frameworks that are being deployed across the web tier for differentiated web PaaS offerings. We have customers that are actually plugging in new custom resource providers. We have partners that are continuing to come online with new capabilities that integrate. So I think it is very much, I'm always surprised, or not surprised, but I'm always delighted when I hear of partners who are extending WAP in ways that we never envisioned. Before we conclude, though, I would love to run through a couple of the links because there's so much going on with WAP. It is hard to distill it down in just to a couple of sound bites.
Let's do that. And here's a great time for people to take a screenshot as well so that you know, keep that data as well.
All right. So one, I just want to point out there is a download link where you can go to and get the information from our Microsoft.com site. This is where you would go to get Windows Azure Pack and to download it. It's refreshing right now. This is the page where you can learn more, try it, deploy it, get the support for the forums. Here, for anybody that's deploying it and working with it, I highly recommend you go to our user voice feedback page. This is a great place. We do look at this in consistently, daily, where we're getting basically the top requests and votes. You can actually vote for the features that you'd like to see in WAP and add new features and capabilities and see what's going on with the community. So we have a very active user voice site going on right now. There's also this Building Clouds blog, which has a lot of great information about private and hosted clouds and what's going on in that environment and how to build those clouds. And while that's queuing up, one thing I want to stress, there is a wiki. This wiki is amazing. This is an amazing resource for the engineering team. It's an amazing resource for the community. I'm going to click this WAP wiki for all things wiki. This is stunning. If you go to this page, this is a list of information about articles, publications that are happening on WAP. If I click this, this is pulling up right now. It is in the doc that you made available as part of this Jumpstart program. And if you go to this wiki site, it's hosted at the TechNet on Microsoft.com, and you scroll down for the list of resources. I want you to watch now. I am scrolling through this screen.
That's
I am still
a lot of
scrolling.
Resources, huh?
I'm not even a quarter of the way through. I am still scrolling. Still scrolling. I am halfway through. Not even quite. Now I'm halfway through. I am still scrolling. Look, I'm still going down. This is a long list. It is daunting how much information and examples. The nice thing about this, one, you can search and refer to this wiki. This is a great resource to try to look for information and publications, and you also know who provided that information and made it available in the wiki. So I highly encourage you to look at the wiki. There is a Twitter feed. You can go hit the Twitter feed to learn information on what's happening in WAP. There is a product support lifecycle in here. I got to do a shout out to Mark Van Eyck. He has an amazing demonstration and session that he did at TechEd. He actually shows in his demo an example of doing a challenge for doing a login through a mobile SMS challenge to get authenticated with the authentication provider. I highly encourage you to go watch his session at TechEd, and this is a session you can watch anytime on demand. Mark Van Eyck did this. It's a great session from TechEd. If you really want to see some interesting, fun configurations of WAP, this is a great session to go look at.
Excellent. Well, on that note, we want to make sure that we thank everybody that's helped us out, especially our Q&A team. This has been one of the best Q&A teams for any event I've been involved with. Had a lot of great help from our MVPs, our other internal resources engineering team. So for all of our Q&A people out there, thank you for the support. I also want to thank all of our guests. Brad's come in twice as well. Andy Zeller, who helped organize the event, and certainly our production team, the guys behind the scenes. Barry, Danny, Christopher, Shannon, all of the team that helped build this, Martin, Mariah, Brandy, thank you everybody for your support. This recording will be available on the Microsoft Virtual Academy approximately 2 weeks after today. We're going to spend a little bit of time in post-production, cleaning it up, building the Q&A. So please share this with your friends, encourage them to come back, and this will be the start of our training on the Windows Azure Pack. Because stay tuned, there's definitely going to be some more coming. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.